So this evening we're going to talk about prayer. And I have a feeling I've said this many times before at the beginning of a class, that this might be the most important class of the entire course. But you could say that it all culminates in this. All that we've said up until now comes to a crescendo. Because I could tell you that everything that we do as a church exists for one reason only. To bring you closer to Christ. That's it. Now I can make it more specific. The church has a job description. What they call the three munera of the church. Munera is the plural of Latin word munus, which means work. It comes from Christ himself in the Gospels. Three things we're supposed to do. Number one, proclaim the word. Number two, carry out the works of charity. Number three, number two, carry out the works of charity. Number three, be sanctified. Okay? And each of those flows from the next. The very first thing that we do as a church is proclaim the word. Before we open a soup kitchen, before we do anything else, we first proclaim the word of God. That's our number one. If we could do nothing else, we would try to announce the gospel and its message. The next thing we do, we have to sanctify people. And that's the giving of grace and sacraments. From that flow all the works of charity, but in that order. To draw you closer to Christ, everything that we do, every bill that we pay, every blade of grass that we cut, every light bulb that we replace, it's all ordered towards you knowing who God is. This has come up recently sometimes in the church. If you ever follow church news, there's a lot of bickering among cardinals and bishops one with another. And every once in a while, a bishop or a cardinal will stand up there and, you know, make some overly specific political demand. And another one will step and say, hey, you know what? Our number one job is not to give a weekly editorial on the most recent events in the news. Our number one job is to help souls find God. That's what we're all about. And my point in saying all of that is this. You can't do that without prayer. But the thing about prayer is that a lot of people don't understand it. They don't know what to do. So we're going to talk about that here this evening. Okay? We want to understand what a prayer life is and what to do when we pray. And in a sense, the most important thing that I'm really doing here this evening is I'm exhorting you to actually get up and live a daily prayer life, because only you can do it. If you do this, so many things in your life will fall into place. When I've had the chance to sit down with people and talk to them about prayer and what it is and how to do it, and they go and take time each day dedicated to prayer, the most common thing they've ever said in response to me is, I can't believe I wasted so much of my life not doing that. Thank you. Everything kind of falls into place. You have a unifying principle around which to make sense of everything that happens to you in life. I heard somebody once complain about their education. And they said, you know, I went through high school and I went through college. And I tell you, it was just a smattering of this and a smattering of that. And there's nothing unifying about it. You know, you go and you study a language for 50 minutes. And the next thing you're studying history for 50 minutes. And then you're studying math for 50 minutes. It doesn't have anything to do with itself. I feel like so much intellectual confetti got thrown at me. And there's nothing to unite it all. A lot of people feel like that about their entire lives. I go from here, I go to there, I talk to my boss, I talk to my friend, I talk to my spouse, I pay a bill, I sit in traffic. And what's it all for? What's it all about? If you have a good prayer life, you won't ask that question. Stuff will just fall into place. But if there's a couple of things that I would say about prayer, it's this. People don't pray. If you ask people, by and large, do you pray? They will say yes. But by that, they usually mean they throw up a prayer here and there, or maybe they say a prayer when they feel gratitude for something. But do you dedicate time every day to prayer? By and large, very few people do. Very few people have, say, 20 minutes dedicated every single day to prayer. And if you ask them why, they'll give you one of two answers. They'll say, I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't get anything out of it. And those are two things I would like to try to address here with you this evening, okay? I don't know what to do, and I don't get anything out of it. So let's talk about what prayer is. It is first and foremost a love relationship with God, which sounds very abstract and theoretical, and it is hard to get your arms around it, right? It's big. It's not like loving a spouse or a friend. You can't give them a hug. God is mysterious. God is infinite. But ultimately, prayer is so big that it encompasses that. People fundamentally misunderstand what prayer is about. For most people, prayer is a transaction. I ask you to think about this. Tell me if this doesn't ring true. Most people go to prayer because they want to get something. I prayed for my son's health. I prayed that I would get a new job. I prayed, you know, that I would overcome this illness. I prayed that I would get through that tough day. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with prayers of petition. You know, there's four kinds of prayer. There's prayers of petition, where you ask for stuff. Heard this before? There's prayers of contrition, where you say to God you're sorry for stuff. There's prayers of thanks, where you thank God for stuff. There's prayers of adoration, where you just adore God for who he is. Of those four kinds, which do you think are the highest? Adoration and praise, okay? Of those four kinds, those are the highest. But nothing wrong with prayers of contrition, prayers of petition. You can ask God for stuff, and I'll even tell you the theology behind it. God is very much like a good parent who has every intention of giving you everything that you could possibly want and then some. But even the best parent can't give things to a child who will not cooperate with what the parent is asking. For example, let's pretend like a parent has a trust fund for a kid and he's going to pay for their university free and clear all 4 years plus graduate school, but the kid won't work. The kid won't study. The kid parties and parties and never pays. All this stuff that the parents wanted to give the kid will never receive, and it's not the parent's fault. Here's a parallel case. There are thousands and thousands of favors, blessings, gifts, strength, personal integrity, hanging from heaven by silken cords, and prayer is the sword that cuts them free. But you must cooperate with God. Does prayer change God? Instinctively, you know the answer is no. But I need you to internalize this answer. God's already perfect. He's not changed. It's not like you talk him into stuff, right? If you pray enough times, he'll change his mind and go, well, you talked me into it, right? God isn't like that. But what happens, rather, is as you pray, you get changed. And you become more like God. And you become more capable of receiving all that God wanted to give you in the first place. I sometimes think of like a criminal mind like a Pol Pot or a Stalin or some of these 20th century dictators, or these mass murderers, these sorts of people. Sometimes people will ask me as a priest, they'll say, why did God make them like that? And the answer is God didn't make them like that at all. God made them good, but they had a free will and they didn't cooperate with God. Who knows what gifts God might have intended for some of these people and what he might have wanted to bring up out of them. But they didn't cooperate. Okay? So prayer is a petition. For most people, that's the beginning and end of prayer. And what do they say? They say, I went to pray and it didn't work, right? I went to pray and it didn't work. And are you aware that that kind of an approach to prayer, that transactional approach, right? I did my part, and God didn't do his part, and God didn't hold up his half of the bargain. You ever stop to consider that that's paganism? If you go back into the ancient world, and you go to, like, say, the gods of Mount Olympus and the gods of Greece and the gods of Rome, what you'll discover is an entire system whereby people go to the right temple at the right time of year with the right offering and say the right prayer in the right way as a transaction of getting the stuff that they wanted. That's paganism. But you know what's fascinating is that a lot of Catholics treat God just exactly the same way. God, I want this. What did Samuel say in the Old Testament? Speak, Lord, your servant is listening. What do we say to God very often when we go to prayer? Listen, Lord, your servant is speaking. Perfectly backwards. Now, it's not to say there's not a good thing with a prayer of petition. But it's fundamentally a love relationship with God in which you get changed. You get transformed. And not only does the prayer transform you, but having been transformed, it then makes you pray better. Pray well and you will pray better. Pray better and you will pray more. But it works in reverse as well. Pray little and you will pray less. Pray poorly and you will not pray at all. The better you pray, the better you're going to live. If you're praying rightly, you'll get changed. You'll become less selfish. You'll become more thoughtful. You'll become more patient. You'll become less petty. And if you can point a finger at a Christian who doesn't live up to these things, well, God bless him. Who knows what burdens he's carrying? Or maybe he's not praying well. But you can also point a finger to a Christian who is living those things. They're patient, they're forgiving, they're kind, they're good even to people who are not good to them. They're praying well. And you want to know what? Every time they live a good day, they go back to prayer, and their prayer is even deeper. No relationship in your life is ever static. Are you aware of that? At all times, every relationship in your life is alive, and it's growing stronger or weaker every day. If your relationship isn't growing stronger, it's growing weaker. And it's like that with God too. If you pray well, you'll live better. And if you live better, you'll pray better. And if you'll pray better, you'll live better. And so on and so on and so on. And that spirals all the way up to heaven. And the reverse is the case. Prayer does not exist on a ratchet. Regression is possible. If you pray poorly, you will sin more, live worse, pray worse, and eventually you'll chuck the whole thing. Okay? So it's a love relationship. How you pray and how you live, one enriches the other. Another thing to understand about prayer, I got here in your notes as well, is because it's a relationship, please understand there's no technique. Now, if you go to some retreat and you listen to them talk about prayer, I bet you a lot of them will tell you what you need is a prayer rug or a prayer candle, or you need to light some incense or some kind of technique. Now, don't get me wrong, those things might not necessarily be harmful. But do you understand that prayer is part of a larger relationship? And just like any other relationship, no technique is going to make it better. If you have a troubled relationship with your son or your spouse, you won't make it better by lighting incense, buying a rug, you know, getting a certain possession and putting it in a certain place in your home. No mechanical technique is going to replace the complete relationship dynamic there that needs to be attended to. In prayer, it's how you live and how you pray. Okay, I'm going to tell you a little about how to pray today, but please understand, you can't divorce how you live from how you pray. And in that, I would probably make this one point. People struggle and fall. We're all, morally speaking, about as strong as soap bubbles. But when you fall, when you commit a sin, do you stay down or do you get right back up? I want to encourage you to get right back up. Because that shows God that in spite of your own personal weakness, your heart still belongs to Him. And God can work with that. The one thing God can't work with is someone who's determined to live and continue in their sin. You'll find these people, they're just living together. And you tell them it's a sin, and they just, well, God understands. No, actually, it goes against the gospel, and it's wrong, and if you just won't quit, there's kind of nothing God can do. It's like, God will not force Himself on you. You have to try. You have to put forth an effort. And this is the whole work of conversion. That's prayer, okay? So understand that it's a love relationship with God. Now, here's another question I want to take up here this evening. And that is, why pray? And this is a question people often ask. I say, if God knows everything, and if God knows what we want, and if God knows what we need before we even ask Him, then why do we have to pray? Now, I already described to you that you engaging with God in prayer changes you. But let's take a look at two main reasons here. Number one, you are, as you sit, dissatisfied with your life. Just by being a human being. Alone among all the creatures of the world, this human person wants more than this world has to offer. We're always agitated about something, depressed about something, running from something, complaining about something. And when you achieve what you thought your heart had set out and wanted, you look at it and you say, "You mean that's it?" I like to quote Jim Carrey, who, as I said, is not noted for his spiritual depth, right? But he once upon a time had a really great quote. He said, "I wish everybody could be rich and famous just to see how empty it is." I was reading this little book once upon a time on the life of John Lennon, believe it or not. And you know, all he ever wanted was to be the career success in music. And then he played his concert with the Beatles in New York City. And he walked away from the stadium and he was like, "Okay, that was great. But what's it all for? You know, I thought it would be more fulfilling than that. And it's not. Why are you always dissatisfied? Squirrels don't have this problem. Turnips are perfectly happy to be turnips, right? Kittens and dogs, and they're all perfectly happy. Just only a human being can have this existential inner crisis of wondering, what's it all for? What's it all about? Because you were made for God. And nothing in this world can possibly satisfy you. There's an inner empty ache in your soul that stirs and churns, that you can't quite explain. It drives your actions, it drives your plans, it drives your desires. You want fullness, you want something that's infinity. Prayer is a way of addressing this which you were created for, okay? Nothing else ever seems to do it. One of the most fascinating things I discovered, I don't know if you've seen this or heard this before, perhaps you've heard this at least anecdotally, but suicide rates increase as someone's net worth increases. Richer people are more likely to kill themselves than poor people are. Why is that? There's actually a very good reason. And it goes like this. If you're poor, let's say you have a hard time paying the rent, you immediately have something to work on. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to pay that rent. I'm going to get myself out of this hole. Maybe you're driving a broken down car. You say, "Dag nabbit, I can do better than this." Maybe you're in a dead-end job. Maybe, you know, you say to yourself, you've got purpose, you've got direction. And you act on that purpose, and you act on that direction, and it keeps you going for a while. The thing about the uber-wealthy is everything they've ever wanted is already theirs, or if they want it, they just write a check. And as a consequence, they have to face this deep inner existential unhappiness in a way that a lot of the rest of us who struggle through life don't have to face. If you don't have something to go on, something deeper, something spiritual, in other words, if you're not plugged into your supernatural destiny, it can be a pretty dark place. And that's what I want to try to tell you. You're actually living in a pretty dark place until you plug in. And it takes your cooperation. Thoughtful people will come to realize this. Touched by grace, they'll begin to seek God. There's three ways people seek God. They're in your notes. Jadedness. You may or may not have had this experience in life in which you feel your own weakness. Maybe you fall into some kind of sin like, you know, substance abuse, maybe some kind of sexual sin, something like that. You become disgusted with yourself and you say to yourself, "I can do better than this." A lot of people, that's a springboard to grace, and they discover God. Right? Another one, weariness with mediocrity. Have you ever had the experience, and don't all answer at once, by which you go about your life and you feel like a gerbil in a running wheel? And it's one thing after another, same stuff, different day. And something inside you says, you know, is this all there is? I mean, is this it? Is it just, you know, from here to the nursing home to the funeral home? And nothing more. And you say, "There's got to be more to life." And something inside you yearns for greatness. And somehow you feel like you were born for it and created for it. That can be a springboard to God. Another major springboard to God is just a sudden grace. You ever heard of St. Francis of Assisi and his conversion story? A lot of people have heard of it. A lot of people haven't, for the sake of those who haven't. Francis of Assisi was a wealthy man. He was the son of a wealthy cloth merchant in the emerging middle class towards the end of the Middle Ages. Life of the party. Every girl wished she could have his free time. wish you could have his attention. Francis of Assisi was deeply unhappy. And one day, he just had a breakthrough, just a sudden grace. He discovered that it was God who he wanted to dedicate his life to, and his whole life turned around. St. Paul, you know the story about St. Paul? Got knocked off his horse. If you don't, St. Paul was a virtuous anti-Christian, persecuting Christians and put them to death until suddenly one day God knocked him off his horse. There could be a sudden grace, right? A sudden gift. But that's the first big reason why you want to pray. You will be running from one distraction to the next all your life long, trying to dull your inner ache like a narcotic until you discover that you are made for more than this world has to offer, and prayer is your gateway to understand that, okay? The second is actually even more compelling, and that is that when you pray, you become better. You become more of who you're meant to be for all the people who are counting on you, all the people who love you. Every year, when I hear the second graders' first confessions, and every year you get the second graders are making their first communion, and they come forward to make their first confessions, which, by the way, I'll remind you all, if you haven't made your first confession yet, and you are, unless you're being baptized, somehow make your first confession, right? I've already told you that. But you'll get these little second graders come in and make their first confessions, then you get their parents coming in. And you'll say to yourself, wait a minute, that's not a second grader's voice across the screen that I hear. You're the biggest second grader I've ever heard. What brings you in here today? And they'll say something along the lines of, you know, my kid's making his first confession, and I'm beginning to realize my kid's taken after me, and I got to clean up my act. And I say, bravo, Mom, bravo, Dad, you're getting it. You become better for everybody who counts on you by being closer to God. I was going through a real rough span of life once upon a time, and a friend of mine lined up a conversation I could have with a cloistered religious sister. Said this lady was like, you know, a saint on earth. 10 minutes of talking to her was better than being on retreat for a week. As you grow closer to God, your positive impact on others increases. Have you ever, they're very, very rare, but you'll meet somebody who's so holy that you walk away, you feel aglow and inspired. Very often that person is just a friend of God, and they spread light everywhere they go. I heard an image once called the lamplighter. Apparently in Victorian London, there was a job that someone would have to light the gas lamps. And he would have this long pole, and he'd go through the city streets lighting one gas kerosene lamp after another with this really long pole. It was so dark in the morning you couldn't see him. All you knew is that everywhere he went, he left a trail of light behind him. That's who we become when we were close to God. It's very, very compelling. As a priest, you want to be as good as you can possibly be. As a mom, as a dad, as a friend, you want to be as good as you can possibly be. Prayer makes you better. Okay, so now here's the crux of the class. What is prayer and how do we pray? Let's talk about that, okay? First of all, prayer is very simple. It's the raising of your mind and heart to God. That's what prayer is. As you sit right there, you are an intellect and a will, as I've described before. You have a mind that's made to know the truth. And you have a heart that's made to love. When your mind and your heart are raised to God, you are praying. It's not necessarily reciting words. It's much bigger than that. But I'll give you an example of how prayer is the raising of your mind and heart to God. A bunch of years ago, it was 1996, there was a 747 from TWA flew from New York to Paris in the summertime. No more than 10 minutes into the flight blew up and everybody died. If you're old enough, you remember it. Well, I was on that exact same flight one day earlier. And when I woke up the next morning and heard that my exact same flight had blown up over the Atlantic and I had missed it by one day just because I changed my schedule, instinctively my mind and heart were raised to God. I didn't say a single Hail Mary or Our Father, but it was prayer, believe me, right? You go into a doctor's office. You get a bad diagnosis. You walk out. Your mind and heart are raised to God. You're praying. You walk into a test, right? Your mind and heart are raised to God. You're praying. You walk out of a test. You better be praying. But it's very, very simple. Whenever you raise your mind and heart to God, you're praying. And if you're not raising your mind and heart to God, you're not praying no matter how many words you say. But the words are meant to help you. So now there's three basic kinds of prayer that I want to draw your attention to here. They're vocal prayer, meditative prayer, and contemplative prayer. And they're three different ways of raising your mind and your heart to God. Okay? So there's an image for these three kinds of prayer from Teresa of Avila. I think it's a very helpful image. If you think of your soul as a garden, and you could think of God's grace as water, and you want to get the water into the garden, you want to get God's grace into your soul. There's lots of ways you could do it. You could go to a well with a bucket, drop the bucket into the well, fill the bucket with water, come back to the garden, throw the water on the garden, and repeat, and repeat. And that would work. You could water your garden that way. If you wanted to make it a little bit easier, you could dig a ditch out of a nearby river and make an irrigation stream. And then you wouldn't have to go to the well anymore, right? The river would do the work for you. It would all just flow right through the garden. But the best way of all would be just to let the rain fall. Each of those three, the bucket, the irrigation ditch, and the rain, are images for vocal prayer, meditative prayer, contemplative prayer. If you've never heard this before, and if it sounds funny, I want to reassure you, I'm not making this up. This is our Catholic mystical tradition. It's just that the words and terms that I'm using for it come from St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross. These are 16th century Spanish mystics who put into words what the church had always believed. But they were the first ones to take what the saints of old had always believed and always experienced and always written about in all their writings and put specific words and terms onto it to help other people find their way. So that's what I'm doing for you here today, okay? Three basic kinds of prayer. And you could categorize the three basic kinds into two big categories, vocal prayer and mental prayer. Mental prayer is meditative and contemplative, and vocal is vocal. Let's talk about each of these, okay? First of all, vocal prayer. Vocal prayer is anything that involves words. So when you go to Mass, is that vocal prayer? Yes. When you say an Our Father, is that vocal prayer? Hail Mary, vocal prayer? Anything at all involving the speaking of words or the hearing of words is vocal prayer. Now, of the three, it's the lowest of all kinds of prayer. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't have meaning or it doesn't mean it doesn't have its place. The value of vocal prayer depends on how close you are to God. For example, if I don't know you and we sit down in a car together, let's say we're going to the bank, let's just pretend. It's going to be a little bit awkward, right? We don't know each other. What are we going to talk about? Probably the weather. Maybe we'll talk about traffic. But it's not going to be all that close because the relationship isn't there. The words are strained. Correct? But what if the relationship is there? What if it's two best friends or two absolute sweethearts and they're on the exact same trip to the exact same destination? They can communicate more in a single word or even a glance than other people could in a week. Similarly, vocal prayer. If I don't know God very well, if I'm in a strained relationship with him, you know, saying an Our Father could be difficult. It could be strained. But if I'm a deep, close friend of God, I might not even be able to get through the entire prayer. I might get so lost in every word. Teresa of Avila tells a story of a nun who came to her convent, wanted to join. She said, I don't know if I can join your convent. Teresa said, why not? The nun said, well, I only know one prayer. Teresa said, which prayer? And the nun said, the soon-to-be nun said, I only know the Our Father. And Teresa said, how long does it take you to say an Our Father? And she says, it usually takes me somewhere between 40 minutes and an hour. And Teresa said, come right on in. You're just who we're looking for, right? But vocal prayer. No matter how close you are to somebody, you will always use words. But the value of those words. So people will come to me and they'll say, I don't get anything out of Mass. Do you know what the honest response to that is? It's not very flattering. The honest response to somebody who says, I don't get anything out of Mass, is to say that the fault is your relationship with God isn't strong enough. Believe me, if it was stronger, you'd get something out of every word. St. Philip Neri has a story of which he had a deal with his altar boy at Mass, because he would go into Mass and he would fall into ecstatic prayer and lose all track of time for like 2 hours. And he would deal with his altar boy, if this happens, just put out the candles, come back in 2 hours, I'll probably be ready to continue. The exact same Mass that other people find boring. Is the Mass any different? No. Is the relationship of the participant different? Yes. Do you see how vocal prayer varies depending on how close you are to God? All right, that's vocal prayer. Now, meditative prayer. When I tell you to pray, this is what I'm really talking about. Let me tell you what meditative prayer is. It's actually very simple. Meditative prayer, and again, I want to remind you, I'm not making this up. This is our church's mystical tradition as expressed by Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross, and I'm just giving you a summary. But meditative prayer is when you take some writing, like a psalm or an Our Father, and you really do stop and think about every word. It's called Lectio Divina. Have you ever heard of Lectio Divina? Perhaps some of you have gone on a retreat and you've heard of Lectio Divina. If you haven't, it's the centuries-old monastic tradition of going through some passage very deeply, word by word. Let me give you an example. Psalm 34. It's one of my favorite examples. Psalm 34 says, I will bless the Lord at all times, his praise always on my lips. Look to the Lord that you might be radiant with joy. So just stop right there. Let's talk about what we just said. You hear these psalms at Mass. They go in, for many of us, go in one ear and out the other. But if you ever prayed about them, you'd realize how rich they are. I will bless the Lord at all times. Now you stop and you pray about that. And you say, wait a minute. Do I bless the Lord at all times? Heck no. In fact, when I'm driving, I'm very rarely blessing the Lord. Right? When I get online and I see somebody who's wrong on the internet, right? I'm very rarely blessing the Lord. When I speak with a fellow coworker who I really don't like, I'm very rarely blessing the Lord. But Psalm says here, I will bless the Lord at all times. And then you pray and you say, God, come and help me. I need to really do better with the way I talk, with the way I treat people, with the way I treat this person with whom I have a strained relationship. And do you see how that turns into a prayer? That's meditative prayer. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise is always on my lips. You know it's not always on your lips, correct? Aren't there many things coming off your lips that are not the praise of God? We don't need to go into them, right? But one of my favorite little lines from Psalm 34, look to him that you might be radiant with joy. And you say, wait a minute, am I radiant with joy? No, I'm really not. In fact, most people would not describe me as being radiant with joy. Maybe the reason is I'm not looking to God enough. Maybe I'm looking at the news too much. Maybe I'm looking at the stock market too much. Maybe I'm looking at public opinion too much. Maybe I'm more looking at what other people think of me too much. But I'm definitely not radiant with joy. And maybe I need to look to the Lord more. And then you turn into a prayer. That's meditative prayer. So far, so good? Lectio Divina. When I say take time to pray, which we'll talk about in just a second, that is what I would ask you to do. Take something you know, like an Our Father, or a favorite psalm, and try to go through it word by word, and pray about what you read, and when you run out of gas, move on to the next word. It's about going deep, not about covering a lot of surface area. Here, we'll talk about the Our Father. That's another example. You can really pray an Our Father. If I just say the word our, it could be my whole prayer. Because if we say our Father, what does that make us one to another? Brothers and sisters. Now think about that. Your whole relationship changes when you realize that, you know, in spiritual speaking, you've got a tie with these people that runs deeper than blood. Who are my mother? Who are my brother? Who are my sisters? Said the Lord. Whoever does the will of my heavenly Father is brother, sister, and mother to me. And I can think about somebody with whom I'm really having a hard time getting along with, and I can just meditate on the word our. Or how about Father? Honestly, most people don't think of God as being a loving father. Most people think of God as being a stingy Grinch. Really? Why won't you give me what I ask for, God? I'll show you. And I'll get back at you, God. I just won't go to church on Sunday. Then you'll be sorry. Right? Stingy Grinch. A demanding taskmaster. A lot of people see God as a demanding taskmaster. Here's another commandment. Here's another law. Here's another obligation. Here's another hardship. Here's another difficulty. You know, as if your poverty wasn't bad enough, here's cancer to go on top of it, right? A demanding taskmaster. A lot of people see God as the Force from Star Wars. this distant, mysterious something out there. Whatever he is, you totally can't know about him, so don't bother. That's not what Jesus said. In fact, the word Jesus, the word the scriptures use for God is Abba, which is baby talk. You ever heard that before? It's baby talk. When you take a little baby and you have them say, Daddy, they could go, dad, dad, dad. Well, the Middle Eastern ear heard dad, dad, dad as Abba, ba. So Abba became daddy. The very best images you can possibly conjure up of what the best father could be don't even come close to how good God is. And that's who Jesus says your father is. Pray about that. You see how we can go on and on and on? That's your prayer. All right. Now let's talk about the highest kind of prayer. It's very mysterious, very hard to describe. Contemplative prayer. And it goes something like this. As you're praying, you can come to an awareness that God is present, that you're known and loved, and there's no words. There's just a loving awareness. That's contemplative prayer. When it happens, stop, put the book down, put the words down, stop forcing the meditation, and live in it as long as you can live in it. Sometimes it lasts for a minute, sometimes it lasts for 20 seconds, sometimes it lasts for 5 minutes. Depends, right? It is prayer, no words, no images, no concepts, loving awareness of God's presence, or even a dry yearning for God. You could go and pray, and there's this empty yearning of a... And your mind and your heart belong to God. There's no images, there's no words, there's no concepts, there's no recitation even in your head. You're just aware of God or how bad you want God to be present to you. That is the highest kind of prayer. Make it last as long as you can. St. Francis de Sales says, pretend like you're carrying in your hands the world's finest perfume, the world's most costly perfume. Don't let a drop of it slip through your fingers because of your carelessness, but hold on to it as long as you possibly can. And that's it. Those are the three kinds of prayer. Now, the thing about contemplation is you don't make it happen on your own. Remember how I likened it to the watering of a garden? You can get water from a bucket on your own. You can dig a ditch on your own. You can't make it rain. That has to happen in God's time. And God, in his own time, gives this gift of contemplative awareness of his presence for as long as he usually sees your desire and your capacity and matches it, but it's a total gift. You can't go decide you're going to go do it tomorrow. It happens when it happens, for as long as it happens, because it happens. But just remember, somebody once told you, when it happens, let it last as long as you possibly can, okay? So let's talk about the effects of prayer. I already talked about how it transforms you. It makes virtues grow: humility, love, fortitude, patience. You begin to learn that you are precious in God's sight, which is something a lot of people don't know. A lot of people, they're told God loves them, but they don't really believe it. And they want somebody to convince them. One of my favorite books is The Brothers Karamazov by Fyodor Dostoevsky. There's a fascinating little scene in that book in which this elder priest named Father Zossima is speaking to this woman named Madame Holikov. She's known as being a woman of little faith, she's described as being. And she says to the wise elder priest, she says, you know, I used to have this beautiful faith as a little girl, but then I grew up and they told me science could explain everything. And when we die, there's nothing left to us but flowers on our grave. And I want that little girl faith back again. And I need you to convince me that it's all true. And he says, I can't convince you. And she says, well, then there's no hope. And he says, there is hope. If you want to get your faith back, practice Christian virtues. Love from the heart with an indefatigable love that just doesn't quit. And you will not need anybody to convince you that it's true. You will know in the depths of your heart in your prayer. Now, just to complete the story, Madame Holikov said, oh, boy, that's a very tall order. I don't know if I can do that. And the priest said in reply, uh-huh. Love in actions is a harsh and a dreadful thing compared with love in dreams, which I think is a very wise line. But as you pray and as you live, nobody will need to convince you that God loves you. Nobody will need to convince you. You'll know. So start. your intimacy with persons will grow. People will stop insisting on having their own way. They'll see small things as small, big things as big. And as I mentioned, your beneficial influence as a person grows. And as I mentioned, people who do this, they usually, if they ever come back at all, they come back and they say, I wish I'd started this years and years ago. Prayer transforms you. Now for some real important questions. When to pray? How long to pray? Well, let me tell you this. If you don't take time to pray, you won't pray. That's the difficulty of it. That's the challenge of the evening. If you walk around saying, my work is my prayer, I want to tell you that no, your work is not your prayer. It's like a relationship. It takes time. You have to dedicate time every day in which you're doing nothing but praying. Like a couple of sweethearts that might have some date night, they set aside time. They're not doing anything else. They're just focusing on each other. Relationships thrive in carefree timelessness, right? If there's somebody you don't get along with and you have the opportunity to spend time with them, have lunch with them every day for 2 or 3 months. The time that you spend will make you get along even with somebody you previously didn't like. Back in the day when people talked on the phone, these days it's all text messaging. Once upon a time there were these things called phones and people talked on them. And you'd find, you know, like the mom getting mad at the teenage kid for being on the phone for 2 hours with his sweetheart. Get off the phone, she'd say. Get off the phone, she'd say. And finally the kid would hang up and the mom would say something like, you know, what on earth were you talking about with her for 2 hours? What is the answer? Nothing. Nothing. Carefree timelessness. Please. You must give God time every day in prayer. If you don't take time to pray, you will not pray. If your work is your prayer, then you don't have a prayer life. If you're just throwing up a prayer here and there when it's convenient and not ever giving time to the Lord, let me tell you, it's like any other relationship. Don't say you weren't warned. So there's a question you have to ask. How much time to pray and when? Well, pray when it's best for you. Pray when you won't be interrupted. But that being said, there's a reason why people who are serious about prayer wake up early to pray. And the reason why they wake up early is because it's a time that nobody's going to interrupt them. I want to just plant that little seed in your mind. You might have to wake up 10 or 15, 20 minutes early and dedicate time to prayer every day. How much time? Depends. But here's a rule to follow as when learning how much time to pray. Choose an amount of time that you can absolutely be faithful to without ever cutting it short or skipping it. And I mean when you're on vacation, no matter what. And make it small enough that you'll actually stick with it. Add to it only when you're certain you can add to it. Because God doesn't care, but this helps you to persevere. Okay? It helps you to persevere if you say, I'm going to start with 10 minutes a day. I'm going to find my favorite psalm. I'm going to look at the clock. When 10 minutes are up, 10 minutes are up. Like I said, this is more mysterious than any human relationship. It takes a little bit of doing. But start with something you know you can be faithful to, and when you are sure you can add to it, then add to it. Perhaps 10 will become 15. Perhaps 15 will become 20. I would like to tell you that as a generality, you probably aim at some point in your life for at least 30 minutes of uninterrupted prayer a day. You never notice these television shows take about 30 minutes? It takes about 30 minutes to get from point A to point B with somebody if you want to have a deep conversation. Yeah, about 30 minutes. If I have somebody in my office and we talk about something, I pretty much can't get to complete a conversation without spending about 30 minutes. And it's funny how that is, relationally speaking. And, you know, it's funny with God, too. If you spend about 30 minutes a day in prayer, I think you'll find that it's nourishing, but build to it. When? Whenever you can. But it'll help you if it's at a consistent time every day. Again, that God doesn't care, but it does help you. Now, a few questions about prayer that people often wonder. People talk about distractions. Happens to everybody. Teresa of Avila says that distractions in prayer are like temptations in your moral life. It's just a scar from original sin. The reason why you get distracted isn't because you're a bad person. And you'll always get distracted. And you'll continually get distracted. There'll be some saints and high kinds of prayer that'll go for long periods of time without being distracted. But let that happen when it happens. In the meantime, when you're distracted, quietly draw your mind back to God. That's all you have to do. Just don't give in to the distraction. If you're distracted by, email, Don't pick up the phone and check your email. Don't give into it. Let your prayer time be prayer time and save the rest for later. If you don't give in to distractions, nothing is lost. Another question that comes up in prayer is interruptions. What happens if I'm at prayer and suddenly there's an emergency? Teresa of Avila says that attending to a necessity is better and quicker at drawing closer to God than continuing to pray. Charity is better and quicker. So, if you're trying to pray, and I don't know, some little kid cries or whatever, maybe you're a mom, get up and attend to the kid, okay? If it keeps happening every single day, maybe you need to change the hour a day in which you pray, okay? Maybe you need to consider to change that. But never worry about an involuntary distraction for a necessity. God may have thrown it into your prayer time deliberately. People will talk about their life circumstances. They'll say, if only I had more money, I could pray better. If only I had a better neighborhood, I could pray better. If only I didn't have such noisy neighbors, I could pray better. If only I, and they'll list all these life circumstances. Better house, better spouse, more money, whatever it is. Please understand, God has you exactly where he needs you to take the next step forward. God has you exactly where he needs you. And every circumstance in your life at this moment is ordered towards drawing you closer to him. You will not pray better with a better house or a better neighborhood. And your closeness to God depends on your sincerity and your desire to do God's will. Okay. The last thing that I would talk about is, as I mentioned before, how you live and how you pray are intertwined. So the more generously you try to live the gospel, the more you give, the more you care, the more you go generously beyond what's required of you, the more you try to do God's will, the faster you're going to learn how to pray and the better you're going to learn how to pray. And as I mentioned before, it is possible to go backwards. Prayer isn't on a ratchet. But if I would end with just one thing, it would be this quote from Teresa of Avila at the very end of your notes. The most important thing is determination. Whatever you do, never, ever, ever quit. Most important of all, she says, is that they should make a most determined resolve not to halt until they reach their goal. Whatever may come, whatever may happen to them, however hard they may have to labor, whoever may complain of them, whether they reach their goal or die on the road, even if the very world dissolves before them, do not quit. Now, the last two pages of your notes are bulletin columns I wrote once upon a time that people said they really liked, and they're both about prayer, and so I wrote them there just for your edification. So it's just an introduction there to this very, very large topic of prayer, but I hope you find it helpful.